Now, the history of national borders is often vexed and violent, as our attention is fixed on the fate of the Irish border. On the other side of the Atlantic, the border between the US and Mexico has increasingly become deeply politicised. In this piece, writer and reporter Jonathan Creasy explores the history of this 2,000-mile frontier and how that history informs the situation there today.
In the recent midterm elections in the United States, the world witnessed a campaign of fear waged against the idea of a so-called invasion on America's southern border.
It's been a busy year here along the U.S.-Mexico border. Right now, the first families in that migrant caravan are arriving along the California stretch of border there in the Mexican city Tijuana.
That's Angela Cocherga, an Emmy Award-winning journalist based in the Texas borderlands.
Now, this is a caravan that started out from Honduras, made its way through Central America and through Mexico. These are largely families, parents with children, who are going to the U.S. seeking asylum.
Cocherga is one of the border reporters responsible for bringing these distressing current events to national and global attention.
President Trump mobilized hundreds of troops. He sent them to the U.S. border, the Texas stretch of border, even though the caravan's headed towards California. That's the route now. The other thing we saw play out along the border was what some considered a very heartbreaking policy, the zero tolerance policy that separated hundreds of parents and children.
But if we go beyond the headlines, how can history and the cultural identities of people on the border shape and deepen our understanding?
The U.S.-Mexico borderland region is really one place, one people, almost a third country. There is an official border line, but there are families who will tell you that the border crossed them. They didn't cross the border.
The first question we have to ask is, where did this border come from in the first place? The current U.S. president has claimed that the border is, quote, sacred, invoking the kind of language associated with the idea of manifest destiny in the 19th century and its associated Western expansion and devastation of native populations.
The dictator, Mexican dictator Porfirio Díaz, had a very famous saying, Pobre México, tan lejos de Dios y tan cerca a los Estados Unidos, which translates as, Poor Mexico, so far from God and so close to the United States.
The current U.S.-Mexico border was drawn as part of the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, following the U.S. victory in the Mexican-American War of 1846 to 1848. But what were these borderlands like before the war, just a century and a half ago?
Really, there was no border per se. I mean, we tend to think of the border as a kind of very fixed, delimited, and patrolled line demarcating the areas of national sovereignties.
That's Professor John Moran Gonzalez, director of the Center for Mexican-American Studies at the University of Texas at Austin.
What is now the U.S. West, in the early 19th century, boundaries were ill-defined. There was a sense that this territory was up for grabs for whoever could advance a colonial project. Of course, all the while, the tribal nations who inhabited this were always contesting these encroachments upon their territories.
Though there was bitter internal disagreement about American imperialism and manifest destiny, prominent opponents included Abraham Lincoln, Ulysses S. Grant, and Henry David Thoreau, there was a great deal at stake for the U.S. in its westward expansion.
The United States was very interested in acquiring a presence on the Pacific coast. One has to remember that in Mexico, the U.S.-Mexican War is known as the War of North American Aggression, that is, as an imperialist land grab.
There was an Irish presence in the war, the San Patricios, or St. Patrick's Battalion, led by John Riley, originally from Clifton, County Galway. Made up partly of Irish Catholic defectors from U.S. regiments, the San Patricios fought alongside their Mexican Catholic counterparts, giving the U.S. troops their severest challenges of the war. Ultimately, this effort ended in defeat and the execution of 50 of the San Patricios. Riley was not executed, though he was branded with the letter D for deserter.
Yo quiero luz de luna.
The treaty signed to end the war set the boundary of Texas at the Rio Grande and gave the U.S. California, half of New Mexico, and large parts of Arizona, Colorado, Utah, Wyoming, and Nevada. One of the articles in the treaty also established the first border patrol. For decades in the 20th century, the border was relatively porous. The US had labor shortages, and Mexico had a labor surplus. It was natural to tolerate and even facilitate what is called circular migration between the two countries.
Mexican workers have been part of the U.S. labor force for generations, in spite of the border. In the past, people could work, earn money, and then go home to their families in Mexico and return again the following year. That circular migration has been disrupted by increasingly tighter border enforcement.
Even in my lifetime, the experience of life on the border has changed drastically, at least for the Texas-Mexico border. When I was in high school, way back in the 1980s, we would think nothing of crossing the bridge every Saturday night. No concerns about our safety. We had no concerns that we had no passport. We would just cross and have a good time in the cantinas in Matamoros and then return. And we never thought of it, as it were, as crossing into a foreign country. It wasn't a foreign country, it was home.
Jonathan Creasy there with that dispatch from the borderlands in Texas on the past and present of the US-Mexico frontier.